Hey, I know. I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very spooky episode of Out of the Drying Pan. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by my co-host, Austin. Hi, Austin.
I see dead podcast host.
Ooh, very scary. I know the intro was a little different this week because we're not reviewing two episodes this week. We're doing something different, something scary.
Very scary. We are writing fan fiction.
Ooh, oh my god. Bone chilling, honestly. It is scary. I can't speak for Austin, but I know my writing is absolutely grotesque and...
But that's okay. We're specifically going for horror, grotesquery up in here.
Yes. Hopefully we nailed the assignment. I know Austin nailed the assignment.
Well, don't be so sure about that.
Oh, okay. So just, yeah, real quick thing to throw out there. This is an E for Explicit podcast, so listener discretion is advised.
There'll be lots of fucking and murder here, so get ready.
Yeah, I said E for Explicit, so that was your warning. I think this is going to be a surprise to both of us, because last week, if I recall, we pulled some random prompts, but there was a handful, and we didn't quite commit to one, so we just... We'll surprise each other with what we ended up picking, right?
I might surprise myself because I randomly wrote a second story at like 1 a.m. last night on a work night when I was struck by inspiration. I was literally like, I have to do this or it's going to bother me if I don't. So I just stayed up till like 2 a.m. typing on my phone like a lunatic, and it's utter garbage, but that's fine.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown of creativity. Mm-hmm. What can you say? Meanwhile, I'm over here frantically texting Austin, I don't know how to write a story, help me. And he's like, I just let my brain tell me what to do. And I'm like, wow, such a charmed life.
Okay, I'm not saying I'm writing anything of great literary merit here. I'm just trying to have fun with our Out of the Drying Pants audience here. That's all I'm doing.
I'm so paralyzed by like indecision and overthinking that I can't even have fun. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I write? It has to be perfect.
Well, you know who never hesitates to write?
You.
Pokemon Megastar.
Oh. I love listener feedback.
Yes. Pokemon Megastar says, well, first of all, they have a recommendation for a Odyssey-based conceptual musical. On YouTube with songs by Jorge Rivera Jimenez. And even though Pokemon Megastar is not a musical guy, dang, they loved it.
Dang, they loved it. Okay, rave review there. We'll have to check it out. Thanks for the rec.
Okay, so referring to the Celebi and Joy episode, the universe really wanted to kill that little girl Joy, huh? But in reference to the Team Rocket origin story episode... Their little fan fiction is that Jesse and James both separately went to Pokemon Tech and told each other about it later.
Oh.
The biker gang thing is a bit harder to explain, but I don't know. I don't know what to tell you there. It's just confusing.
I think it was the result of their shared ayahuasca trip that they had, and they like had a false memory as they were high as balls. So
possibly. I think Pokemon Megastar's theory is that they hung around the Bicycle Gang and Team Rocket at the same time? That's a funny idea.
It could be. Could very well be.
We also got compliments for our amazing discussion about Jesse and James and Meowth and their interesting dynamics. But also suggested that this episode should have been a trilogy of episodes.
Oh.
Part one is the Jesse and James episode. Part two is the addition of Meowth. And part three is them doing their missions leading up to our first introduction to them, meeting a boy and his mouse.
That would be actually a really good arc.
Like Team Rocket, the miniseries.
They should totally do a spinoff of just them and all their misadventures that they get up to without Ash.
That's peak TV right there.
Yes, agree.
Okay, MVP for the Richie episode is Richie, ironically enough.
Okay.
For saving Nick's life, but LVP also for Richie for not trying harder to save him. MVP for the Team Rocket episode is the Double Trouble song. That is true cinema. I know it should have won a Grammy. We all agree. It was snubbed.
I know. It's a musical masterpiece, truly.
And LVP is Cassidy and Butch for failing right at the end.
Losers.
Now here's a question for us. With all of our episodes so far, with this being episode 201, what is our favorite episode title, podcast title that we've come up with?
Oh, our own episode titles.
That took me a second to realize. Okay.
I don't know.
I'm just going to like kind of go backwards and read off good ones.
I don't know. That's really a good question because we have so many now.
God, 200 shit.
Can you
think of all
it?
The things we could have accomplished without doing this project?
I mean, probably nothing. Probably just sitting around and not being productive and sharing our ridiculous goofiness with the world.
Oh, this one we both really loved was Once in Future Slow King.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a top one for sure.
Because it works so well. It's a King Arthur Slow King.
That was an Austin one, by the way. If it's a really good, clever title like that, you can usually bet it's Austin.
That's not necessarily true.
I can't remember. Honestly, I like don't know which ones we like both come up with, but I know that one was for you for sure.
Here's one of the last episodes that Jacob was on as a regular, and he said, we should do the episode title, Uh-Oh, Spaghetti Ho-Ohs. And we were both like, no, we're not doing that. And then we did it.
That was a good one, too.
Chuck around and find out.
Gotta love a good pun.
I mean, you can look at this list, too, if you have any
favorites. Let me go. Okay, I'm going to go into Spotify. Give me 1 second.
Oh, I like, is that a monster in your pocket? That was
funny. our Halloween episode a couple Halloweens ago.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't love a Halloween episode?
Smack My Ash Like a Drum was probably one of my favorite ones.
This is one of my favorites, actually. I think it's a little underrated, actually, if I may say so. The episode about the scientist researching Pseudo-Wudo, and we called it Pseudoscience.
Oh my god, that scared the crap out of me!
What?
Sorry, my phone started playing something, and I was like, it was just a high-pitched whine enough to make me think there was like a bug buzzing around my ear, and it freaked me out. Sorry.
Okay, well, it's appropriate for the holiday.
Can you just re-say what you said?
I like the episode called Pseudoscience. That was a good title.
Oh, that was a good one, too. God, you know what? Is it conceited to say that I love, like, all of our titles?
No, I don't like all of them. I like some of them. I'm just trying to pick out the back. My favorite is always going to be Unprotected Sexts.
Yes. Okay, you know what?
I'm proud of that one.
That must be the ultimate favorite. I think I'm in agreement with you. To answer the question, that is for sure the top one. Was that the Pokemon Lovers Club episode?
No, that was the one with the Meowth cult on the island.
Oh, right.
Okay, I'm kind of proud of Butch Cassidy and the Snapshot Kid.
That was an Austin one. Liquor Under the Mistletoe.
That one was kind of a stretch.
That was a Jacob one, just saying.
Was it? Okay.
I don't know why. Okay, my phone insists on like playing some of these episodes randomly as I'm like scrolling, so I'm not sure.
Can you just like turn down the volume?
I could have done that earlier, but I didn't even think to. Entei, you are not the father. That was a good one. Yeah, okay. I think that, yeah, I'm with you. Unprotected Sexts are my favorite title.
You gotta say it like that. Sexts.
Sects. That's S-E-C-T-S, if it's not clear.
Even though it sounds exactly the same as sex, like S-E-X-T-S.
That's what makes it so great.
It's a visual pun.
It is. It really is. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a great question. You guys tell us, what's your favorite title? Because we try really hard to come up with amusing things.
All right. That's all the feedback I got.
Keep it coming. We love to hear from you guys.
Tell us your scariest, I don't know, how about this? What's your favorite horror movie?
Yeah, in the spirit of the season, okay? Like, if it's not clear, this is our Halloween spooky episode. So we want to know, what's your favorite Halloween movie?
What's yours, Alex?
My favorite Halloween movie?
Favorite Halloween movie and favorite horror movie.
Oh, those are two different things.
Yes, they are.
Oh, goodness. Okay, my favorite Halloween movie is Nightmare Before Christmas.
Of course.
Of course.
What's your favorite Christmas movie? Is it also Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yes, it is. It's a two for one. Ah. It's pretty good. Favorite my favorite horror movie? Ooh, this is a more difficult question because I don't really watch a lot of horror movies.
Hey, hang out with me more often.
My favorite horror movie, I have an answer in my head, but I don't know if it's my favorite. It's just what I just thought of in this moment, so okay. I'm not sure. I was going to say My Bloody Valentine.
Original or 3D remake?
Original, of course.
Original?
Yeah!
That's a terrible movie.
I know, it is a fucking terrible movie, by the way. I don't recommend it to anyone. You tell me. Maybe I'll remember something.
Well, mine's The Shining.
What about your favorite Halloween movie?
Because that's more difficult. And I'm sorry to say that I think it might be Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge.
What the fuck is that? I've never heard of that.
Kids who had cable in the 2000s know.
Yeah, Austin was part of an elite group of people that had the cable, and I was part of the peasant class that did not. Maybe, okay, speaking of sequels, Austin has been watching a bunch of Halloween sequels, so that would be on theme for your rewatch.
Yeah.
We could watch it together.
What good discoveries have I made this past few weeks? I really liked Prom Night 3. I thought that was really campy fun.
What was the really campy bad movie that we watched? Was it Sleepaway Camp a couple of years ago?
Love Sleepaway Camp, even though it's incredibly transphobic. And I want to show you Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3.
There were sequels to that movie?
There were multiple sequels.
Good lord. Yeah, that movie had a questionable ending.
Yes, it did.
I wasn't a fan of that, but...
Yes, it was not a good... It was not a very progressive movie, no.
No, not at all. But it does have the camp. And literally, it does have the camp.
Literally the camp.
I'm cheating. I'm so sorry. I'm cheating because I'm looking up what the best horror movies are because I'm literally blanking on...
Oh, let me guess what some of the best ones are from movies. That list. The Exorcist, Psycho...
It's got me scrolling left and right. It doesn't have a whole list.
Ew, gross. Slideshow presentation.
Oh, Psycho is on here, yes. Okay, apparently the number one best horror movie is called His House. I've never heard of that.
What the fuck is that?
A refugee couple makes a harrowing escape from war-torn South Sudan, but then they struggle to adjust to their new... I have to click on more. Sorry, hold on.
Oh, nope.
To their new... Where is the synopsis? Hello? Their new life in an English town. Okay, great.
Okay, it's on Netflix. I don't have Netflix currently, but I'll give it a watch when I can.
I've never even heard of half these movies, but this is just what the Rotten Tomatoes Certified Fresh thing is saying. Oh, Get Out is such a good movie.
That's a great movie.
Can I say Get Out is my favorite horror movie?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay, I take back what I said about My Bloody Valentine.
Good revision.
Okay, yeah, I'm changing it. I think Get Out is a great movie. Okay, that's my choice. I cheated and looked it up, so.
Okay. I'm also going to plug I Saw That TV Glow.
Oh, you mentioned that.
Yeah, it's a good one. What was the other movie I saw recently? Shit, what was it called? Oh, Give Her Back.
Give Her Back. Okay, I think I saw both of those. I did want to watch I Saw the TV Glow, but then I got scared and I didn't want to watch it by myself, so.
Correction, it's called Bring Her Back.
Okay. I will keep a note of it. I still don't know if I'd watch it by myself, but maybe I'll watch it with Josh or something. I don't know.
I Saw the TV Glow. It's really good if you grew up on like stuff like Goosebumps and Are You Afraid of the Dark? Like stuff like that. Yeah.
God, Goosebumps used to really actually scare me when I was a little kid.
Of course. It's baby's first horror.
Is that where you got started with it? Did you read your first Goosebumps book from the library and you were like, oh my gosh?
Well, no, Alex. You see, I had cable, and so I saw Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Oh, okay. I had to read books and stuff, so.
I also read books, thank you.
Oh my god.
Speaking of reading.
Okay, good choices.
Let's read some stuff right now.
Okay, yes, yeah, so this is our very highly anticipated, I just know, fan fiction episode. Dun dun dun. the last time we wrote anything on this podcast was last Halloween. So it's been almost a full year since we wrote something. Austin over here wrote two stories because he's an overachiever.
Yes, I did.
So I think what we're going to do, if I'm not mistaken, Austin, is you're going to go first. You're going to read your first one and then mine, and then we'll follow it up with you with your second story, right?
Okay, great. I'm going to do my first story, and I'm not going to do any preamble, but if you have any questions after, I'm glad to answer them.
Okay, so do you want to give the prompt that you picked to kind of set the stage, or do you have a title or anything?
That means I got to bring the prompts up.
Like I said, I think at the beginning, we picked a random, there was like a Halloween prompt randomizer that we used, and we picked a few at random, and I'm not sure what Austin ended up going with.
With this one, I went with something ancient rises from an old pond.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Okay. All right. Are you ready? Gonna jump right into it.
This one is called Beyond the Mirage.
You actually titled it. Ooh, I didn't title mine.
Our heroes stood next to the small lake at which they had met Misty the day before. Whereas yesterday she had run up to them with her adored Togepi, today she held nothing in her arms. Togetic had gone off to live in the Togepi Paradise as the guardian Pokemon of the Mirage Kingdom. And though Misty knew for the best, she was sad to be returning home to Cerulean City without her companion. Brock chimed up. "It was really nice of the Mirage Kingdom to offer you a ride home on their blimp, Misty," he announced. Brock had a habit of stating the obvious. "Yeah," Misty agreed. "It was really nice to meet you, May and Max. You make sure Ash doesn't get in too much trouble, and Brock doesn't get carried away when he sees pretty girls, okay?" "We will," May and Max happily said. "And Pikachu, you be good now, okay?" Misty said to the little Pokemon on Ash's shoulder. Pikachu didn't respond. It hadn't been too talkative in the past day, but right now, it was staring intensely at the lake they stood next to. "Hey, Pikachu?" Ash asked. Pikachu muttered a soft, "Pika-pee," eyes dead set on staring on the body of water feet away. Ash turned his head as well, and the others followed suit. Without warning, something rose from the water's surface. It looked to break the surface tension without a single ripple, as if it wasn't truly existing within the water, but beyond it somehow. The object was small, requiring a closer look to confirm what it was. A Togepi emerging from the lake. "What's a Togepi doing here?" Max asked the whole group. Misty felt a familiar sensation of what she could only describe as a tickle within her mind. Multiple other Togepi arose from the lake, each roughly an equal distance from one another. The first Togepi was now several yards above the lake and slowed to a stop. The other Togepi rose to the same height, forming a hovering circle. "They're floating above the water," Brock proclaimed. From the center of the Togepi ring, another form appeared from the water, also passing through it without disturbing the water itself. The dull tingling in Misty's skull intensified, becoming more similar to a headache. "Togetic?" she gasped. Togetic took its place among the center of the Togepi ring. Pikachu leapt from Ash's shoulder and crouched in front of the kids in a defensive stance. The Togepi formation began to glow blue with pulsating energy, a low hum accompanying the charge. A bolt of power surged out from their direction, flying over the heads of the astonished children. It tore through the air in an instant and directly hit the Mirage Kingdom blimp a ways behind them. An enormous explosion boomed as the blimp suddenly erupted in flame. A shockwave blew all the kids from where they stood, knocking them to their feet and skidding across the ground in the direction of the lake. Smoke billowed from the wreckage and sparks of flame flew in all directions. Brock staggered to his feet and shouted, "The Togepi blew up the blimp!" "Mudkip, Lotid, Mudkip, Lotad, put the flames out!" Have you been holding it in?
I'm trying to be a good listener, but I couldn't help it.
You're allowed to respond, for the record. Oh,
okay, I'm sorry. I'm picturing the smoking wreckage and Brock just... Oh, God. Oh, please continue. Woo.
Okay. Brock released his two water-type Pokemon, both of which used their water gun attacks to do what they could from a distance. Max scrambled over to Misty, who was face up on the ground. He grabbed her shoulder and began to shake her. Misty, we need your water Pokemon, he pleaded. Misty's ears were ringing and her body covered in scrapes, but that didn't compare to the searing migraine she was experiencing right now. She could feel a burning rage, but not her own. Togetic was a wellspring of unbridled fury, and Misty could feel it transmitted into her soul. Grabbing hold of Max, she pulled herself up to her feet and stared at the Togepi levitating nearby. The Togepi were now circulating in a circle. Well, that's a shitty sentence. The Togepi were now circulating in a circle.
Circulating in a circle.
Orbiting their leader. Yeah, I should have proofread this. Their eyes had always been pure black, but Misty could now see, or sense, that they were now dilated with holy anger.
Oh my.
Ash was commanding Pikachu to launch an electric attack at the Togepi, but Pikachu's lightning was being refracted to the distance. Mei was standing still, gasping and crying out in terror. Misty didn't bother using her words. She simply thought, "Why, Togetic? Why are you doing this?" From within herself, Misty knew the response. This is what I was born for.
Oh my god. I love your Togetic voice.
I didn't know what it was going to be when I started. It just kind of came out.
An evil old man.
Misty stamped her foot in frustration. She began to yell, No, Togetic! This isn't your destiny! You can choose to do what you want! I choose this!
Oh.
Another smaller bolt of energy struck forward and passed within inches of Misty's body. It impacted the ground behind her, causing Max to stumble to his hands and knees. The rotating circle of Togepi flew off in all directions, reaching land and causing fuelless explosions behind them as they sped along. The sound was deafening, but Misty continued to know Togetic's intentions. Misty thought, Did I mean nothing to you? Was all that love for nothing? Your love sustained me. Your happiness empowered me. My power is your power. Without you, none of this is possible. But why? Okay. Misty was... Okay.
I'm so intrigued, but also I know this is a horror story, but I can't help laughing.
It's almost as if there's a camp inherent to horror, at least when I have a say in it.
I love this. I love the campy take. Continue.
Misty was inundated with images and the feelings that accompanied them. Being spit out of a Gyarados' mouth. Her hand-me-down Pokemon doll sets that she couldn't call her own. Bugs crawling up her leg. Lily laughing at her. Violet looking disgusted to see her. Daisy giving her a pitying stare. Psyduck not listening to a word she said. Ash looking past her, not seeing why she was upset to have to go home alone. Two adults she only recognized from photographs screaming at each other and then at her to go away. This world is a cruel place. It must be wiped away before something can replace it. I'm doing this for you.
Oh.
Misty felt a tear on her cheek before she realized her feet were no longer connected to the ground. She looked around her, seeing the lake beneath her getting more distant as she hovered away from her friends and over the lake. Ash, Brock, Mei, and Max were obscured by the sooty fog that was coming in from all directions. Misty got a better view of the area as she floated upwards, seeing a maelstrom of debris reaching the horizon. Several of the nearby buildings were in flames. These Togepi were moving fast. Togetic was now inches away from Misty's face. It looked into her eyes with a blank expression, but she could sense something other than wrath. It was excitement. A Togepi manifested feet away, appearing in a brief glimmer of white light. Floating in front of it was a bright, almost glistening, yellow stone. The stone traveled through the air, lightly brushing up against the spikes atop Togetic's head. Togetic was enveloped in a light now, momentarily blinding Misty. Its form expanded, and when the light dissipated, a new, larger Pokemon was in its place. Togetic just evolved into a Togekiss! Brock shouted from a distance. Is Brock being written in character in this? I hope so.
This is everything I could ever want. Oh my god. I love how she can't even see them from the ground. She has she has transcended far above, and somehow still Brock is being able to make out what's happening overhead and giving us exposition.
Of course!
Oh my god!
Togekiss flew forward a bit and turned around as Misty gently was placed on its back. The Togepi that had handed off the shiny stone teleported away, presumably off to carry out destruction elsewhere. Togekiss flew back towards the ground, presiding over Misty's friends as they all looked on in shock, mouths agape. Misty knew what Togekiss wanted. "Go, Gyarados," Misty commanded, holding Gyarados's Pokeball in front of her. The blue dragon came out as ordered and looked at her, unsure of how to proceed. "Gyarados, use Hyper Beam," Misty said plainly. Then she pointed downward at the Pokemon she was sitting on Togekiss. "Now!"
Oh my.
Gyarados didn't hesitate. Pure force burst forth from its mouth, aimed in the direction of Togekiss and Misty. Togekiss responded immediately, corkscrewing through the air in the opposite direction. The Hyper Beam shot without a target, ultimately hitting the lake with a large burst of water. Misty was bucked off and began to plummet toward the ground. It was only a brief moment, though, as Gyarados caught her mid-plunge with its tail. She held on for dear life as Gyarados returned her to the ground alongside her friends, who were all running up. The last thing Misty sensed was betrayal. "So, you decided this, then?" Our heroes ceased to be as an explosion overtook their bodies.
Oh my god, what?
The Togepi Force continued their reign of terror until all life on Earth was exterminated.
Oh my god.
What will the new paradise of their creation be like? Find out as the journey continues.
Oh my god, I wasn't expecting that at all. R.I.P. everyone.
That was my little homage to Little Shop of Horrors, by the way.
Oh my god, that was great. I loved that. And you know what the best part is that I could absolutely see this as like an episode.
You could? You really yeah. could? I don't think you could.
I could see it as a continuation of the Mirage Kingdom episode.
Yeah, this is part 3.
Oh, that really made me laugh. I don't know if that was your intention, but
it was. Great. It was.
I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. Oh, wow. Great job, Austin. I'm sorry, I just realized my phone has been playing Out of the Drying Pan episodes this entire time.
That's fucking meta.
That is.
It wasn't actually making noise, right?
No, but it was playing.
That's too funny.
I just looked down. Well, Austin, I am thoroughly entertained. I love that story. That was great.
All right, I'm ready for yours. I'm so excited.
Oh, God. Don't get too excited now. It's always funny listening to, like, you read your stories and your style of writing versus how I approach things and write. So you'll let me know what you think. Oh, and also if you want to interrupt or ask a question during it, just let me know or hold your thoughts. Either way.
Or yeah, I will feel free to do so.
Yes, feel free. Okay, so my prompt that I picked out from the few that we had last week was, I can't remember the others, but this is one I picked. A woman afraid of clowns is forced to work in a traveling circus.
I think I know where this is going.
You do?
Maybe. Oh, let's find out.
I wonder. Maybe. Is it obvious? I don't know. Okay.
The title is?
Oh, the title is Halloween Fanfic, because I'm unoriginal and uninspired.
It's like a Banksy.
Halloween Fanfic. I don't know. Can I retroactively have a title? I'm not sure.
Sure.
I don't even know what it would be. That's what it is. Halloween Fanfic.
When you find a phrase you like, that's the title.
In the actual story? Yeah. Okay, let's see if we can pick out something good and
okay, great.
Come up with something. All right. Everything making sense so far? The man behind the desk was staring. Bored, heavily lidded eyes seemed to look right through her. She had the feeling the question was entirely rhetorical. Luckily, she was pretty clear on what he'd said and didn't need anything repeated for clarity. Oh, right, one last thing. He held out a piece of paper for her to take. When you finish your hours for the day, get whoever is supervising to sign off. Otherwise, it won't count. Casey took a hold of the sheet of paper, eyes skimming over it.
I was not expecting Casey. Okay, sorry.
Full disclosure, I wasn't either, but she was the thing. She was the person that popped into my head when I was writing this. So I was like, I guess this is the character I'm using.
Casey has a way of making herself known.
She really does. For all the hate I espouse about Casey, she is my main character. Casey took a hold of the sheet of paper, eyes skimming over it as the man continued to say something about the shuttle schedule. At least the judge only gave her a week. A slap on the wrist for getting caught vandalizing the Starmie team bus after the Electabuzz's humiliating defeat.
Love it.
Hey kid, you're holding up the line. She was plucked from her musings when an older man tapped her on the shoulder and motioned to the increasingly impatient group of people behind him. Oh, sorry. She quickly hopped aside to allow the clerk to assist the others in line. Casey glanced around, shifting awkwardly from one foot to the other as she tried to recall what the man behind the counter had said about the shuttle. She sheepishly peeked over her shoulder, trying to make eye contact long enough to get his attention, but more people had queued up in his line, all clamoring to get their questions answered. She shuffled through a mental Rolodex of half-thoughts, trying to recall enough of what he'd said to piece together what to do next. There was supposed to be a shuttle that ferried groups from the courthouse to the community service center, wasn't there? She noticed a pick-up and drop-off sign, but no one was nearby. Did it leave already? Damn. She stepped beyond the threshold of the dimly lit building and out into the bright outdoors. Temporarily blinded as her eyes adjusted to the harsh burst of light, she instinctively raised a hand to shield her face. A sudden gust of acrid wind whipped her hair around her face, and she tried to brush it away as she walked. Casey didn't even notice the figure before her until she bumped into them. She lost her balance and awkwardly stumbled back. "Oh, excuse me," she started, but was quickly interrupted. "Think nothing of it." The cheerful voice was quick to reassure her. "Say, you look like someone who needs a ride." Still a bit shaken, Casey nodded. "Yes, to the community center, for..." The jolly man gave a high-pitched chortle and ushered her forward to a small, nondescript van that was idling nearby. "In you go, watch your head," he sang, sliding the door behind her as she plopped down on the seat. "And away we go. The others are waiting." A seed of uneasiness was beginning to sprout somewhere deep in her mind. She guessed she simply missed the earlier shuttle and would meet up with the rest of the community service attendees at the center. Casey sometimes jokingly referred to herself as directionally challenged, since she often got lost while traveling. But she could have sworn, even with her geographical impairedness, that the community center wasn't this far away. Maybe this guy was just taking the scenic route. Just as she opened her mouth to speak, the van came to a sudden halt. She lurched forward, her head knocking against the seat back in front of her. "Ugh," she groaned and touched a finger to her lower lip. Blood. Great, a split lip. Hopefully they had some kind of first aid kit around here. The van door slid open. The jolly man was standing there, smiling from ear to ear. "Hey, what was..." Casey began, but was once again interrupted. "We've arrived. Now, if you'd please," he thrust a paper into her open palm. "Wait." She didn't have time to tell him that her finger had blood smeared across the bottom of the page. He yanked it back quickly as he'd presented it. Casey's head was spinning, and this guy was barely giving her any time to react. "Hold on," she demanded. Can you just give me a minute?" Finally, she had a chance to survey her surroundings more clearly. The man before her was dressed quite oddly. She noticed for the first time that he was dressed in a colorful diamond-patterned suit. He looked like, what was the word, a harlequin? A small shiver raced down her spine. How did she not notice before? This guy had barely given her time to think since she'd been whisked into the van, and she hadn't really been able to get a good look before now. But she sure did dislike clowns, and anything vaguely resembling clowns. Casey looked past the man, who was noticeably less jolly than he'd been before. Where were they? This was decidedly not the community center. Behind him, past a wooden ticket booth, was a large red and white striped circular tent in the middle of the fairgrounds. Several other smaller tents and booths were set up haphazardly around it. Colorful pennants zigzagged on lines between the tents, and dozens of Pokemon-themed balloons danced above their heads on long strings. She noticed a cute Elekid balloon. Oh, and a Meganium. And a Beedrill, too.
Okay, well, that's fucking scary.
That's a fun coincidence, she thought. The tinny, whimsical whistle of a Calliope floated through the air. Her eyes snapped back to the Harlequin man. He was staring directly at her, bright amber eyes unblinking. Amusing balloons aside, not the circus, she hated clowns. Where the hell are we? I'm supposed to be going to the community center for my community service. The man gave a high-pitched giggle, and he was still staring. Why? This is the fairground, of course. The community center it is not, but we sure could use your service. He threw up both his hands in a dramatic flourish. Come now, the others are waiting after all. A small part of Casey felt like the logical thing to do would be to get back in the van and drive straight back to town. But despite her vehement dislike for the circus, she felt inexplicably compelled to follow. The man led her through the maze of booths and tents. She didn't notice before, but there were actually quite a good number of people patronizing the circus, their voices a cacophony of joyful shouts, playful screams, and laughter. The sickly sweet smell of spun sugar wafted around her, and suddenly there was something else too, an acrid, sulfurous tang that dissipated quickly. She felt a little dizzy, but the man, who was following quite closely, urged her forward toward the big red and white tent. He drew back the heavy fabric flap of the entrance. "Watch your head," he sang. It was pitch black inside the tent. Empty. She blinked a couple of times against the darkness, but her eyes weren't adjusting. She shut them again, tightly, then opened. This time, there was light. Oh, there were people? And Pokemon? There were several assistants who were busily setting up decorations. A few girder milled around, helping to construct the grandstand seating. A Popplio was practicing juggling colorful balls. A Pyroar and its trainer were practicing jumping through hoops. Thankfully, there were no... Oh no. In the middle of the circular tent, a Mr. Mime and a Mr. Rhyme were practicing their pantomime. Oh no. Casey clenched her teeth. She had never been a fan of clowns or clown Pokemon either. She had an old friend whose mother had a Mr. Mime. There had been more than one occasion that she turned down dinner invitations because she just couldn't stand it, as nice of a Pokemon as it allegedly was.
I love how she's like returning down Ash. Like, no, I'm not going to your house.
No. No. Fuck that, I don't want to come over. Sorry, Delia. Not today. Ah, splendid. Things are coming along quite nicely. The man had materialized beside her, which startled her. As part of your service towards the circus, we're asking our lucky participants to perform in the show, he exclaimed. Casey blinked, confused. What kind of community service program had people join a circus act? Wasn't it supposed to be like trash cleanup or community gardening or something? Come, come, let's go join the rest of the troupe. Her guide led her into an adjacent room, where a couple of other young people were huddling together, their backs to her. The man, promising to return shortly, swept out of the room and left her with the others. Casey turned to the two young adults, a man and a woman. Hi. Are you here for the community, service? The girl slowly turned to look at her, and Casey involuntarily recoiled at her appearance. The whites of her eyes were bloodshot, like she'd been crying, and judging from the dark hollows around her eyes, she looked like she hadn't slept in days, or even eaten anything for that matter. Suddenly, she sprang forward, lunging at Casey as her bony hands tried to claw at her neck and head. Casey yelped in a panic and grappled with the woman in an effort to push her off. "Get off of me," she barked, shoving the emaciated woman backward. You! You're real! The woman looked positively baffled as the realization began to set in. You're real! You're real! She kept repeating it like some kind of mantra. Casey felt that same seed of apprehension, the one she'd ignored, blossom into fear. Okay, look, she began, her voice slightly pitching up, although she tried to hide her panic. I was just brought here for some court-ordered community service. I don't know what's going on, but I think it's time to go. She backed away slowly, trying to slip through the flap unnoticed. The man, who had been dead silent since she entered, suddenly croaked out. No one leaves. Not in one piece, anyway.
I love your voices.
I can't do voices. I'm so sorry.
No, I love it.
It took what looked to be a considerable amount of effort, but with the girl's help, he was able to turn to face her. A gasp escaped Casey before she could stop it. The man was practically skeletal. Waxy, mottled skin stretched tight over his skull. His lips were bone pale, a stark contrast to the inky black hollows of his sunken cheeks. Casey stumbled back a few steps. Unless this is all some sort of elaborate scared straight prank, this isn't funny, she warned. I'm out of here. But before she could turn and exit, the girl grabbed at her ankle and held tight. No! She began to shriek, but dropped her voice to a harsh whisper. No, don't. You can't leave. If you do, it'll hunt you forever. Casey tried to kick the girl's arm away, but her grip tightened, voice more insistent this time. You can't leave. You signed the contract, didn't you? Casey's brow furrowed in confusion. What contract? What are you? Then she remembered that piece of paper the Harlequin man had forced into her hand. The one she'd accidentally smeared with her blood, she realized. The girl nodded up at her, eyes wide. You're the first person we've seen in weeks. It hasn't brought anyone new, until you. We thought maybe it stopped hunting, or that it left. Casey pressed her hands to her face. None of this was making any sense. What did she mean, the first person they'd seen in weeks? This place was full of people. She'd passed a bunch of workers and Pokemon on the way.
That's what I was wondering.
Ooh, mysterious. Before Casey could ask any more questions, they heard a sound beyond the fabric flap. She was suddenly aware of just how eerily quiet it was. There was no more din of voices, clanking of tools, or the cries of Pokemon from the adjacent room. They all froze, straining to hear the sound of whatever was coming. It sounded like something heavy was dragging itself along the floor. Something slithering closer. It's time for the show, the jolly voice said. But there was something off about it, something just behind the words, like a popping noise. No, 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 the girl started crying out, her arms clenching tight around the man beside her. It's okay, Anna. He tried to reassure her, but she was becoming hysterical. The flap to the room peeled back, and Casey was hit with that same smell as before, but this time the acerbic stench crashed over her like a wave. A long tentacle-like arm shot through the doorway, and a white-gloved hand clamped around the man's head like a vice. Watch your head, the gravelly voice said. Then his entire body was wrenched away, and the woman was screaming after him. Whatever was on the other side had yanked the man through the door with such force, Casey barely had time to react. It took everything in her power not to spiral. Anna, right? Casey shook the girl's shoulder gently. She looked to be in shock, understandably. We've got to get out of here. Come on. She was cut short by a huge explosion that knocked Casey to the ground. A high-pitched whine buzzed in her ears as she tried to blink away the colorful stars flashing across her vision. What happened? She tried to reach out for Anna's hand, but couldn't see anything through the hazy, rainbow-colored smoke. Casey called out for the other girl again, but got no answer. Something heavy hit her temple, and everything went black. Casey woke some time later, her cheek pressed against the cold dirt floor. She wasn't sure how long she'd been knocked out. Minutes? Hours? Days? She sat up, head throbbing painfully with each heartbeat. The room was in disarray. There were burn marks on the floor, and the fabric walls around her were ripped and scorched. There had been an explosion of some kind, but from what? Casey looked around. That girl Anna was nowhere to be found. Then she heard a small voice from somewhere in the darkness. Hurry up, hurry! A hand grabbed hers and pulled her through the doorway into the main Big Top arena. Anna, Casey was surprised to see her. She'd feared the worst. The girl pushed her out of the Big Top and into the dusk light. Some time had obviously passed, but something seemed wrong. It was getting dark, but Casey could make out the state of the fairground around her. It looked decades abandoned. Just hours earlier, it had been a bustling and vibrant circus, but now it was nothing more than a dilapidated shell. The rainbow pennants were ripped and faded. The tent fabrics were covered in mold and soot, barely clinging to their wooden skeletons. Bits of ripped paper and brittle mylar from long pop balloons littered the ground. The grating creak of a rusty iron hinge echoed through the empty grounds like a ghostly shriek stretched thin across the silence. "It's weakest right after. No reason to maintain the illusion now," Anna was saying as she urged Casey on. They were running through the empty fairground, but to where she did not know. "This is maybe our only chance," she continued, panting from the exertion of running. Casey hoped now she could get some answers. It seemed like Anna was reading her mind because she began to explain. "Jack and I have been here for weeks. Before us there were others, too. It keeps us here, bound with those contracts, and makes us perform for its amusement." They'd reached the white van that had spirited her here. Hopefully, they had a way to drive it far away from this nightmarish place. "Until it drains the life out of you," Anna finished as she fumbled with the van keys. "I've been watching it for weeks. I found where it keeps these." They both clambered into the van. Anna turned to her. "I'm sorry I left you. You got knocked out by a piece of scaffolding in the explosion, and I pretended to be too, until I could sneak away. It was the only time I've seen it distracted since..." She trailed off. "Don't worry about it. Let's just get out of here," Casey urged, watching anxiously as Anna tried to get the engine to turn over. The ignition clicked, and clicked again. Click, click, click. Nothing. "Are you kidding me, piece of shit?" Anna cried out in frustration. Casey floundered, trying to think of something else they could try. She had next to no knowledge of mechanics. "Anna, what..." She was interrupted by an angry popping sound, like a salvo of heavy gunfire. The window shattered. "No!" Anna shrieked. "Head!" shrieked the voice.
Whoa, what? Head?
Head!
Head!
The white gloved hand shot through the window, catching her around the neck just like it had done to Jack. Someone was screaming hysterically, and she realized that it was coming from her own mouth. Casey tumbled out of the van and ran as fast as her legs could carry her. She sprinted into the dense woods, branches and brambles tearing at her as she crashed through the underbrush. As she ran, an inexplicable pain crept through her hand. It was subtle at first, but eventually became an unbearable sear that she couldn't ignore. The spike of pain shot up through her arm and into her head, pounding like a hammer straight behind her eyes. Casey cried out as she collapsed to her knees. She cradled her swimming head as she tried to blink away the film of tears clouding her vision. Is this what Anna meant by being bound? That contract? Casey! Her head snapped up at the sound of her name being called out through the gloom of the forest. I found you. Anna? She whipped around in the direction of the voice but couldn't see anyone. Over here. Her friend's head poked out from a nearby bush. You're alive! Casey cried out in relief. She took a step toward her friend. I thought you were... But the words died in her throat as she approached and realized something was off. Anna was staring at her. Just staring. Her expression unchanging. What's wrong? Anna said. But her mouth did not move. A cold chill gripped Casey. Her friend stepped out of the bushes. She was wearing the same blue, pink, and yellow harlequin suit that the jolly man had been wearing earlier. Dark rivulets of red dripped down from the shoulders, staining the entire front of the fabric. Her head! Casey fell backward, shocked. Her head wasn't even attached! Casey retched into the grass beside her. Watch your head, the creature giggled, shrugging its shoulders in a wave-like motion. Anna's head rolled along its shoulders like a ball. It caught her skull in its white-gloved hand before it tumbled straight off. It was the last thing Casey saw before an explosion knocked her out cold. When she awoke, she was laying on a cold floor. She blinked, trying to regain her presence of mind. She barely remembered anything that had happened. Casey sat up, slowly realizing that she was in a red and white striped tent. The tent flap before her opened, and a jolly-looking woman in a harlequin suit and a younger-looking boy stepped through. "Hi there. Is this where we complete our community service?"
Oh!
The end.
All right, I have questions.
Questions! Go.
Okay. Why the name Shaq and Anna?
I don't know. I just came up with some shit.
Okay.
Why? Does it mean something?
I don't know. I'm just wondering. Why Casey, specifically? Is it because she's the only one you could think of who might be a bad kid in some way?
I don't know. I guess I just was trying to think of, like, what kind of character can I make that isn't, like, an original character or, like, somebody that's individual that I can, like, put into a story.
Okay.
So I picked her. I don't know. She was my inspo.
My next question is, how many pages was that? Because at one point you said it was, like, 2.
It's just over 4.
Oh, okay.
At 11-point font. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. At one point you told me you were having trouble finding a conflict. I would say there was plenty of conflict to be found.
Ooh. Oh, are you going to analyze? I love literary analysis.
So at what point did you go from no conflict to, like, monster circus escape?
I don't know. Well, I didn't know what my original plot was going to be. Like, with that prompt, I was like, okay, how would somebody be forced into working in a circus?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I just tried to think of, like, how you would get into that situation. So the community service, I don't even know where the hell the community service thing came from. I'm like, how can I get her to be an unwilling person, like, or an unwitting person? Like, somebody, like, you'd have to be tricked into going there. Like, it just came out. I don't know.
Okay. And is there any more details you want to give us about the nature of your antagonist?
Do you know what the antagonist is?
I couldn't quite figure it out.
Oh, no. That means I failed in my duty.
What was it?
It was a Blacephalon.
What the fuck is a... Oh! That fucking thing.
An Ultra
Beast. Oh my god. I was like, a Zoroark? But that doesn't make any sense. Okay, that... Okay, it all fell on the plate. I got it now.
I was trying to figure out a clown Pokemon, but I didn't want to do a Mr. Mime thing again because I did Mr. Mime last year.
Right. I forgot about Blacephalon. Oh, see, the newer ones don't stick in my brain as much.
Don't even ask me where the hell that came from either, because...
But that was an inspired choice, because that was, like, the only other clown that there is.
I thought about trying to... Like, my original idea was... My original draft was, like, involving them getting turned into clowns. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, how am I going to make Casey turn into a Mr. Mime? So then I went this way.
Now it all makes sense, because, like, the otherworldliness and, like, the dimensional warping kind of stuff going on. Okay, all right. I gotcha. Okay.
Woo!
All right. You're a much better horror writer than I am, by the way.
Oh, my goodness.
Or a better suspense writer.
Do you really think? Oh, my God. That is so nice.
No, for sure.
Thank you. Up with the highly anticipated second story.
Okay.
I'm so ready.
I didn't really go with the prompt, but the prompt was, a child's imaginary friend is not imaginary.
Was that one of the three that we pulled from last week? Or
yeah.
Okay.
It was supposed to originally going to be completely different, but I ended up saying fuck it. And at 1 a.m, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want. And I just kind of, like, went for it.
I know, I got your text.
I texted you at, like, 2 a.m, being like, okay, that was, like, really deranged. Don't get your hopes up.
I tried to kind of fish for what it could be, and Austin was like, I wrote it in a fugue state, so we'll all be surprised together on what
I will happened. Also be surprised. I don't know what it is, but we're going to find out.
Do you even remember writing this?
Not really.
Oh, God. Okay. I'm ready.
I was 5 minutes late to work because I overslept by 5 minutes.
Really? Because of this?
Yes.
Oh my God. That reminds me. Okay, sorry. Just to sidetrack us again. That reminds me of last year when I was in such a panic of writing that I literally stayed up until 3 a.m. the night before to finish it.
We really traded roles this year, didn't we?
All right. I am so ready. I'm excited.
So this one's called Slash with an exclamation point.
Oh, sorry. Not to like interrupt you before you even start. Did we think of a title for me?
Oh yeah. The Jolly Man.
The Jolly Man. Okay. I love the Jolly Man.
You don't have to do that, but...
I like that. I'm going to go with the Jolly Man.
There's also, like, Casey versus the Tentacles.
There was one tentacle-like
It was an arm. Yes, with a glove on it. That all makes sense now. I was like, what the fuck could that be? Okay, so...
I mean, I know, I kind of took some... It's a little bit of a creative liberties with these prompts and trying to make it fit into Pokemon, so we try. We try, we really do.
So...
Slash.
And I'm going to read this really fast, so try to keep up.
Oh, God. Okay.
It was finally time for the Oak Laboratory Summer Camp Spectacular. Every year, starting on the night of the full moon of Friday the 13th and also the anniversary of the Pallet Town Slumber Party Massacre, Professor Oak hosted a weekend of fun activities for kids.
Oh, the okay. What?
Alex is like visibly reacting.
I'm trying to be good. I'm trying to be a good noodle and not interrupt.
No, interrupt. This is like a Rocky Horror presentation
tonight. What? The Slumber Party Massacre?
Yeah. So it's the night of the full moon of Friday the 13th and also the anniversary of the Pallet Town Slumber Party Massacre. And Professor Oak is hosting a weekend of fun activities for children.
Okay.
All right, they would stay in cabins on the Oak Ranch, and the counselors this year were Ash, Misty, Brock, Jesse, James, Gary, Tracy, May, and Max.
What? I love this.
Gary wasn't there because he had been killed in a deleted prologue scene, but everyone just assumed he was late.
Oh, no.
All the camp counselors were at least 18 years old, and they were all very conventionally attractive. All their actors were in their 20s, by the way, and one or two of them might even become A-list celebrities in a few years after this.
I'm so sorry. This is giving me my immortal...
Yes.
...vibes.
Correct.
Good.
The campers were set to arrive tomorrow morning, so that meant tonight was going to be devoted to setting up things for the camp. But also, it was going to be time for sexy fun and wacky antics. Professor Oak and his hot girlfriend Delia gathered the camp counselors in his lab and was giving out the assignments. Ash, I need you to go gather firewood. Misty and Tracy, you need to set up the bed linens for the cabins. Brock, you're going to be our sexually aggressive camp cook. Jesse and James, I am counting on you to make sure there are no murderers in the woods. May, you need to go inspect and test all of the showers. And Max, you're going to be balancing our budget. Everyone agreed, although some of the characters who were going to be killed first had some sarcastic comments and complaints. Ash went to leave outside, but he ran into the glass sliding door. A suspicious-looking man in disheveled clothes and messy hair stared at him from the other side. He opened the glass door, stared at all the camp counselors, and walked away into the darkness. Ah! That guy was scary! Who was that? May said. Oh, that's just the groundskeeper, Mr. Mime.
Oh my God!
We love Mr. Mime in this podcast.
I know, he's featured like several times now in our stories.
His parents were mysteriously killed at a previous summer camp spectacular 40 years ago today. We found him covered in blood and holding a rusty knife while standing over their dead bodies. So I hired him as my groundskeeper.
Oh my God.
Don't worry about him. He may look creepy, but he's just a red herring, Professor Oak explained. I like to call him Mimey, Delia added.
Thank you, Delia.
Everyone went to do their task, leaving Professor Oak and Delia in the main building. There was some gratuitous semi-nudity as Delia teased Professor Oak in her sexy pink lingerie. Professor Oak made some comments about how she was his favorite former student. That was more socially acceptable in the 80s, but not today. I have an idea, Delia said. Let's play sexy hide-and-seek. You count to 151 and come find me. She giggled as Professor Oak rolled his eyes, but he started to count. Delia removed her bra because her actress didn't have an agent who was able to negotiate a nudity clause. She threw the bra at Professor Oak's head and then went to the other room. Professor Oak finally finished counting and went to go look for her, but she was nowhere to be found. He went from room to room asking for her, but she was nowhere. Then he turned a corner, and there was her naked, decapitated body.
Oh, oh my God.
Oh, shit, he said and started to run. But then a mysterious figure attacked him, and we cut away to a different scene.
Oh, no, Professor Oak, Delia.
Misty and Tracy were carrying bedsheets into one of the cabins. Brock was setting things up in the disgusting kitchen area and spied them through the windows.
Ew, he's a peeper? Oh my God.
Wow, they're hot and horny. I better go spy on them, Brock said. He creeped out the door and went to peep through a window looking into the cabin. Misty and Tracy had put down the sheets on one of the beds, and now they were making out as some jazzy, copyright-free music from a sound archive played in the background.
I'm sorry, I was so distracted by the fact that Brock was peeping that I didn't even realize you paired up Misty and Tracy.
Ah! Brock was super excited. He was so excited that he didn't even notice the murderer stabbing him in the back of the neck.
At least he died doing what he loved.
Yeah, jerking off, staring at people. Yeah. What was that? Misty asked, looking up from Tracy's clavicle.
Clavicle!
Oh, I'm sure it's nothing, Tracy said. Are you sure? Misty asked. You know what? It's probably Max trying to scare us. Leave us alone, Max, Tracy responded.
This is so accurate.
I heard that this was the night of the school bus drowning incident from 1953. They say that the ghosts haunt Talent Town every year on this night.
Wait, I'm sorry. I thought it was a slumber party massacre and now it's a school bus drowning?
It's also the anniversary of Mr. Mime's dead parents. Don't forget that.
Oh, right. Oh, sorry. I forgot about that.
Misty, it's the anniversary of a lot of large-scale deadly incidents tonight. But we can't let that stop us from living.
Oh my God. Okay.
You can't focus on death. You need to focus on life. And I'm here with you, focusing very much on your life, Tracy said, trying to unbutton her suspenders. I'm scared. Can't you just go check? Misty pleaded. Tracy was annoyed, but he went to go check. A solid beat passed as Misty stood there and suspenseful music played. Tracy? Tracy, are you there? She asked. Suddenly, a jump scare happened as Tracy jumped back into the cabin from the rear door. Misty screamed and Tracy laughed. Tracy, don't scare me like that, she said. Then Tracy stopped laughing. His eyes glazed over and a trickle of blood fell down from the side of his mouth. He fell to his knees, dead, revealing a masked figure in a trench coat standing behind him with a knife.
Tracy, no!
Misty screamed and ran out of the cabin into the woods.
Oh, I hope she's the final girl.
We'll find out.
Oh, okay.
She ran and ran and ran until she ran into Ash gathering sticks. She ran literally right into him and the sticks went everywhere. Oh, man, Misty. Oh, like a really deep Ash. Oh man, Misty, we really need this firewood for the Scary Stories fire pit, Ash exclaimed. Never mind that. Tracy just got killed by a madman, Misty yelled. Got killed by a madman? That doesn't sound like Tracy, Ash said.
Oh my God. Of all of us, he's the least likely to be killed by a madman. He's too practical and his headband's too tight for that.
Would you just listen to me? He got killed over there. She pointed toward the cabin she had run from. They could see Mr. Mime standing outside the open door. He stared at them creepily and then walked towards the main building. See? It was Mr. Mime! He's the killer, Misty insisted.
The killer.
I don't know, Misty. Why don't you show me this dead body? Ash said. They went back to the cabin, despite Misty complaining the whole time. Ash was putting on a brave front, but he was scared too. They got to the cabin and didn't find Tracy's corpse or blood or anything.
He was right here! Misty screamed. I saw him!
Ash laughed at her. Is this some stupid prank?
No, I swear, Misty continued to insist.
Ash got very serious for a moment. You know, I sometimes imagine things that aren't really there. I think I have a buddy. A pal who's always beside me. Someone who I couldn't live without. We would run in fields together and go on all sorts of adventures and go to all sorts of places and meet all sorts of people. Ash looked very sullen. Misty didn't know what to say.
What?
So it's okay if you're seeing and hearing things that aren't really there, Misty. I do it all the time, Ash said happily.
Oh, what? What the fuck?
Misty felt like screaming. Instead, she said, we have to find all the others and get out of here before Mr. Mime or whoever kills them. Okay, that's a good idea for us to gather everyone. There's strength in numbers. Let's split up to go find everyone, Ash said. Misty nodded. That's a good idea. Meanwhile, Jesse and James had gotten completely distracted by a lost cat they had found in the woods. The cat was very wary of them, as James tried to lure him in with some bread he had with him.
Here, meow, meow. Here, meowthy.
James said, waving the loaf of bread towards the unimpressed cat.
James, won't you leave that filthy thing alone? Jesse snapped at him. But Jesse, I think with this cat on our side, we could be the best team of all time, James said dramatically.
Oh, I love it. Training days.
Oh, please, that's ridiculous. I am the best counselor at this camp, and I can't have you, that flea bag, or anyone else slowing me down, Jesse huffed.
James looked sympathetically at the cat.
She didn't mean it, meowthy.
But the stray was now hissing in their direction.
See, that thing would just drag me down, Jesse said.
But she didn't see what James now saw, the killer coming up behind her with a knife.
Oh no, Jesse, turn around.
Jesse, run away, James yelled.
But it was too late for Jesse. The masked killer grabbed her by her several feet of hair and slit her throat. Blood splayed everywhere, all over James.
Oh no!
The cat was long gone by now. James began to run away too, tripping along the way. He got back up and looked back behind his shoulder, and the killer was still lumbering behind him slowly. James kept running, letting out a loud, ooh, a fear.
Oh my god.
James ran towards the main building and came across Misty.
Oh my god, are you okay? Misty said. No, no, I'm most certainly not okay, Miss Side Ponytail. Someone or something just killed Jesse right in front of me, James yelled. He killed Tracy too, but when I showed Ash where, the body was gone, Misty explained.
James looked around suspicious.
And just where is the twerp now?
Well, first he told me about his paranoid delusions of seeing a best friend that was always with him, and then he left me to go find the others, said Misty. James nodded. That makes sense.
Does it, James? Does it make sense?
Misty and James went into the building, where they expected Professor Oak and Delia to be having loud, performative sex. But they were nowhere to be found. Instead, they found Max hidden away in a small room in the basement.
Oh, Max, I forgot about you, said Misty.
They explained the situation to him.
Oh my god.
Max pondered, pushing up his glasses up on the bridge of his nose. It sounds to me like Ash is probably the killer. James and Misty both gasped. Meanwhile, there hadn't been any male gaze tinged female nudity for a while. So how about we check in on May in the shower?
Oh my god, Austin!
The camera watched her moving around the shower for a while, but with the justification that it was from the killer's point of view, so it being a little exploitative is okay. Anyway, May got attacked by the killer. She screamed as she got a couple non-fatal stab wounds, and the camera continued to focus on her boobs. She clutched onto and pulled down the shower curtain, psycho style. But in an ironic twist, she managed to wrap the killer in the curtain and shove him to the ground.
Heck yeah, go May!
She ran out of the bathroom,
managing to grab a towel to wrap herself in. May ran into someone as she ran out of this particular cabin. It was Mr. Mime. She screamed again. Misty, James, and Max heard her screaming and came running, all wielding kitchen knives. Even though May was still sopping wet in a towel, she had karate chopped Mr. Mime and she had taken him to the ground.
Fuck yeah, May's a badass.
Mr. Mime tried to kill me in the shower, May told them. No way, sis. I'm pretty sure the killer is Ash, Max said. Hey guys, Ash said, walking up. He was covered head to toe in blood. Everyone screamed.
Oh my god.
I told you, Max said, proud of himself. Told you what? Ash asked. Oh, are you wondering why I'm covered in blood? I found Jesse's decapitated body back over that way. That's because you murdered her, murderer. Die! James screamed. He ran up and stabbed the twerp like 20 times. Ash fell to the ground, dying.
Oh no! What? What a twist!
Pikachu! He whispered. Then he was gone.
Ash!
There, problem solved, James announced. Wait, where did Mr. Mime go? Misty asked. Everyone looked over to where Mr. Mime had been karate chopped to the ground. He was nowhere to be seen. He probably ran away because you attacked him, Max yelled at May. It's not my fault. I just want to go home, May whined. Don't worry, the killer is dead. All's well now, James told everyone. Then a knife dropped from the sky and planted itself in the top of his skull.
James
died with a smile on his face.
Oh, how unexpected and sad. Poor James.
The remaining three counselors all screamed.
Oh my god, what the fuck?
Max looked up, but couldn't see where anyone could have thrown the knife from. They all ran towards the main building, but as they did, the masked killers stepped out from behind a bush, blocking their way. So they all screamed again and ran directionless into the woods. Before long, they ran into a clearing. There was a large, smooth rock in the middle of the clearing, and placed in front of it were what looked like smaller rocks. What are those? Max asked. I don't want to find out, May whispered. May had the right instinct, but Max had to investigate anyway. He kicked at one of the rocks, and it rolled a short distance. The face of Professor Oak looked up from the ground. It was his head.
Oh my god!
The heads of Gary, Delia, Brock, Tracy, and Jesse were also there, each facing the large rock. The survivors all screamed once again, but Misty held up her arms. I hear him! Hide! The three of them dove into some nearby bushes and stayed very still. The masked killer emerged into the clearing, holding the heads of Ash and James by one hand, clutching them by the hair. They were placed behind the other heads, facing the same direction as the others. The killer then noticed the Professor Oak head had been moved from its spot. The killer froze and surveyed the surroundings. Misty, May, and Max all tried not to breathe or make any noise, but then a big roach flew into Misty's face.
What?
She jumped out of the bush screaming. The killer leapt through the air and landed right in front of her, brandishing the knife.
Misty!
The killer was about to stab Misty, but Max heroically jumped in the way at the last moment. He got stabbed instead.
Oh, whoa!
Oh no, Max! May cried out. You know, I'm real sick of you. Hi-ya! She roundhouse kicked the killer to the masked face. She was still in a towel, by the way.
Great job, May!
Then things got weird. The killer's head fell off. Or that's what it looked like anyway. I love how our stories have similarities.
I know. I was thinking that the whole time. I'm like, guys, if you need some reassurance that we wrote these completely independent from each other. Yes, we did. We did not collaborate. And the whole head motif is coincidental.
So now the killer's head has fallen off.
Jeez.
It disconnected from the body and began to float away.
What the hell
is going on? Oh, yeah. May demanded. The killer's mask fell off and the trench coat fell to the ground. The sight was surreal. There stood a robotic wire frame of a headless body, and floating above it was a pink balloon creature with big blue eyes.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Of course, Max gasped, not quite dead yet. It's the anniversary of the pagan Mount Moon blood ritual.
Of course it is.
Oh, I've heard of that, said Misty. The jiggly puff fairies can only come out on the night of the full moon to gather worshippers. Max said, Right. They want everyone to see their performance, but they don't understand what bodies are. So they cut off heads to build an audience. Wait, 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 May interrupted. If it doesn't know what bodies are, then why does it have a robot body? Where did it even get that from? Max snapped at her. Gee, I don't fucking know, May. Why is Jason Voorhees a grown man when he died in the lake as a kid? How did Michael Myers learn how to drive a car? How did Freddy Krueger become a dream demon? Nobody ever explains this shit because nobody actually cares. So why don't you get all the way the fuck off my back? Then he died.
Oh my god!
Jigglypuff cheered at its latest victim and landed back on its robotic frame body. Controlling the mechanics of the body with its little hands and feet, Jigglypuff made the body slice off Max's head. It then placed his head with the others and made sure to put the Professor Oak head back in its previous position. Then something even stranger happened. Jigglypuff removed the blade from the knife, revealing a felt marker tip underneath. Jigglypuff began to draw mystic runes all over the decapitated heads. It looked over its work and beamed with satisfaction. Misty and May hadn't moved, then reacted in surprise when Jigglypuff set its big eyes in their direction. Oh, right! They had forgotten to leave! Jigglypuff smiled and placed the blade back on its marker knife. Misty had had enough. She took the kitchen knife she had been holding this entire time and charged forward. She nicked Jigglypuff as it tried to dodge. Jigglypuff began to leak air from its body and violently jerked around in all directions, deflating. Finally, it blew away into the woods. Red and blue lights appeared behind the two final girls. Mr. Mime must have called Officer Jenny, May gasped. The two of them ran in the direction of the lights. But of course, both of them had to trip over seemingly nothing. May and Misty looked up to see another Jigglypuff. And then another. And another. They were surrounded. No! The two girls screamed. Cut to credits. The end. The sequel is called Slash 2, Seed of Jiggly, and it has Igglybuff in it.
Oh my god! Yay! That was so perfect. It was absolute peak cinema, Austin.
That was my fugue state fanfiction.
Please, I'm begging, somebody out there with any animation skill at all, please turn this into a real thing. That was so great. It was so campy, and it followed the slasher formula perfectly.
Hey, I had a twist. There was two final girls.
I know. I was so shocked. I thought for sure. I'm so glad Misty made it out, though. She was one of the final girls. And we didn't see her die on screen, so you know what that means.
She could be back for the sequel.
She could be back for the sequel. And what happened to Mr. Mime? I hope he shows up in the sequel as well.
Well, they said the exposition said that he went to go find Officer Jenny, but it might be hard to tell because Brock was dead, so he couldn't give us the real exposition.
R.I.P. That may be my favorite thing you've ever written.
More than Mr. Douglas!
Oh, I don't know! Mr. Douglas! Guys, if you don't know what Mr. Douglas is, go back and listen to that episode, fan fiction, because a masterpiece.
I think your freak show circus one might be my favorite that you've written so far, too.
Really?
I think so.
I love how we have totally different styles. I love your approach of, like, the humor. I can't write humor to save my life.
I think that's our challenge for the next one, is Alex writes humor.
Austin writes something serious then.
Oh god, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. Never been able to do it. Oh,
I love how, like I said before, completely independently of each other, we both had a similar theme with the heads.
Yeah, what was that about? That was
weird.
I don't
know. Two souls, two bodies, obviously.
That was convergent evolution.
That was great. I'm so glad you wrote that second thing as well, because I just absolutely loved it.
That was our annual fanfiction episode, everyone. Leave 5 stars.
Next week, though, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled review, right, Austin?
Well, it won't be too regular.
Oh, okay, so.
Because of a quirk, we have to do 3 episodes in 1.
Okay, so you guys get a bonus episode.
Yep.
A 3-for-1 deal.
The episodes are I Feel Skitty, Zig Zag Zangoose, and Maxed Out.
I have a general idea of what 2 of the 3 of those are about, but...
Ooh, what do you think the 2 are?
Well, there's a Skitty involved.
Well, that one's obvious, yes. What's the next one?
And a Zangoose involved.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
And then, you know, the third one, I'm not sure, but maybe Max could be involved.
I will say, reading this, it was so hard to differentiate between May and Max as I was talking kind of fast.
Yeah, they're literally right. The two letters even are like right next to each other.
Especially Ash asked and Max asked. That was hard. I couldn't do that. Apologies for my slurring, as always.
I enjoyed both of those thoroughly. That was really great. Thanks, Austin, for those. And just doing fan fiction in general, I think. It's fun when you get, like, started. Like, at first, when you're, like, thinking of a prompt, it's hard. And you're like, oh, what am I going to write about? But then I think when we got going, the idea materialized. So
that was our Halloween episode. If you have any other ideas for next year's Halloween episode, let us know. Because we are struggling here for ideas.
I already have your idea.
For what?
It's the sequel.
No, for our next Halloween episode, not our next fanfiction episode. They don't have to be the same.
Well, I do think that we need a sequel, Jigglypuff 2, Seed of Jigglypuff or whatever.
It'll be like A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, and it'll be the gay one. Yeah.
Oh my god. So keep that in your queue to write about. But yeah, as far as Halloween episodes, god, who knows?
And what about Christmas episode? Someone give us an idea for a Christmas episode, please. Like, we're running out of time.
We kind of hit a brick wall with that ever since Pokemon stopped doing official Christmas episodes, so.
I have one idea, but it would cost me literally hundreds of dollars, so I don't want to do that. That's not
maybe
happening.
Let's put a pin in that.
Yeah, maybe not.
All right, well, happy Halloween, everyone. We hope you enjoyed our crazy stories. If you want to get in touch with us and let us know what you thought of them, you can always do that. We have our Gmail account, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. We also have our social media accounts, Blue Sky and an Instagram. You can reach out to us over there as well. Same handle for both, @outofthedryingpan. We also have our Patreon. If you like this podcast and want to support us, we would really appreciate it. We have all kinds of cool bonus content you can go check out over there. The link is in the description. And as always, we hope you enjoyed listening, and we hope you join us next week as the journey continues.
Ooh.